Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Tragedy and Hope with my good friend and excellent co-host, Richard Grove. If you're not familiar with Richard's work, you're missing out on a lot. So for all my new listeners, please get over to tragedyandhope.com. I have a live link right here. It's an education that you will never get in school. That I guarantee you. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, Maria.
You know, I'm looking in, you know, it's a beautiful day here for a change. We're not frying in the heat. But, you know, I was thinking about 9/11 and how close we are to the anniversary of September 11th and how you became a smash hit once I got you on my show with your work that everybody else seemed to have had no time for. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. That was like 12 years ago now. Right. And I'm happy to say that even though those circumstances that I described have not been resolved, there's a lot more people talking about those subjects in an intelligent way, which is what I was really trying to point out, was that even though it sounds conspiratorial and it's not being reported by the New York Times necessarily, there's a whole bunch of interrelated, validatable, verifiable facts that are outside, that are bigger than the official narrative, and that, you know, it's up to inquiring minds to defend freedom from lies. And how can you know the truth if you don't ask these questions? And if you just think that you've been given the truth by mainstream media, you've been short-selling yourself on freedom and liberty and cognitive liberty, especially intellectual self-defense to defend yourself against untruths.
Right.
Well, and that's the main way that they use to control people through human history. So if you read human history, it's a bunch of instances where they use words and weapons to control human behavior. That's the essence of what we call history.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it was surprising to me, but maybe not, to see the 9/11 criminal Rudy Giuliani come back out into the public eye as Trump's supposed attorney. And then Giuliani, I don't know if you saw it, said that truth isn't truth. Truth isn't necessarily truth. I mean, how can this guy even show his face? You know, that was the first thing I look at Giuliani, all I see is 9/11. And to say that truth isn't truth is as Orwellian as you could possibly get.
Well, back when I interviewed John Taylor Gatto for the Ultimate History Lesson, he quotes Supreme Court Justice, and the Supreme Court Justice's quote was that truth is what strong people say it is. And it comes from a philosophy of pragmatism. So I think it was Oliver Wendell Holmes who said the quote, but the philosophy school, like the informal school of philosophy that these guys subscribe to, is pragmatism, which means that truth is how whatever benefits you most at any given time is their claim, which is solipsism insofar as saying that truth doesn't exist and it's malleable, you know, whatever you want to make it be. I think the rest of us have to live subject to an objective world where there's objective truths like poverty and famine and hunger and criminal theft at the highest levels. Those things are all tangible and objective, right? Those are the things that tie us in common, along with our basic human needs, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to the study of what is truth, how do other people define truth, right? And that's what you're giving. The example of Giuliani, he's like, well, our definition of truth is this.
Right.
And it basically is the same as truth is what strong and rich people say it is.
Exactly.
But that's not the actual truth. That's their claim. It's up to us to demonstrate intellectual self-defense and to question these claims and actually find what is the root cause, what is the evidence, what is verifiable, you know, what are the neglected aspects, and so on and so forth. But too much of our society has been shaped because people read declarative sentences in media or hear them on mass media visually, you know, on TV. Mm-hmm. And they don't question those things. And really, that leaves our society in a stimulus reaction metaphor, where you get a stimulus and you emotionally react without thinking in between the stimulus and reaction. Now, there's a quote that's attributed to Viktor Frankl, although upon researching it, he never really wrote or said this. But the quote is this, and I still find the quote inspiring because it's true. This is something you can actually test and find, that in between stimulus and reaction lies a space. And in that space, you can choose to ask a question and think. And by doing that, that is where freedom comes from. Because otherwise, there's going to be people telling lies and you're going to be subservient to those lies because you don't know any better. That also is pretty much the story of human history up till now. But we have the availability of the internet to do something other than entertain ourselves to death. We could be asking questions and finding and discovering new answers from angles and aspects that have heretofore not been investigated. And I think that's what is like the amazing opportunity today that is overlooked by most people, because you have access and you have the ability to ask questions, but people aren't structuring these abilities or these availability of abilities in such a way that they can actually attain, maintain, and retain freedom. And I think that's what is the common thread between all of us. When you take away these labels of political parties, what we're all concerned about is our freedom. We just have different aspects of freedom that are more important or prioritized to all of us. And I think that's what, if this country was ever to be great, it would be recognizing that everybody wants freedom. We have different priorities for what that freedom looks like, but we're all on the same page insofar as we don't want to be slaves to despotism, right?
Right.
So I think that while they're trying to divide and conquer and drive a wedge in this country and create a civil war, a race war, whatever you want to call it, I think it's up to us who are seeing this, and we're all sick of seeing it. Like, I've seen it happen like a slow motion train wreck for 12 years now, and it just looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. So knowing that, let's all just take a step back and be like, wait a minute, do we have to continue down this course of fighting with everybody about who had like different opinions and stuff like that? It's like, that's not what this country's about. It's about the objective facts, not our like subjective truths, right? There's personal truths and there's like objective truths. Objective truth is we could measure how much water is in this cup, right?
Right.
We could each think, oh, it's 2/3 full. That's my truth. And you could say it's half full. That's your truth. But we could measure it and we could do some calculations. But then at the end of the day, does that even matter? Should we argue about such trivial things when we should just probably drink more water?
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Well, you know, what I have noticed, especially with the, and I know you're not on Facebook, which I just got off a 30-day suspension. But again,
I know, Maria,
again,
your thoughts are dangerous.
I know.
It's the government's job to tell you what to think and what to communicate.
Well, what I've noticed is since Facebook began to what it is today, they might as well just call it hate book. They've stripped all the news sites that you and I would, you know, actually consider news sites. There's no real news. Everybody's just posting hate and their opinions based on nothing. And they even now are starting to rate users, just like that show Black Mirror, by your believability, you know, just following what you like, what you don't like, this and that. So it really has dwindled down into total, it's like a vast wasteland. Remember when people used to say that about television? So it's an amazing thing to me. But, you know, one of the good things that came out of my 30-day suspension is I discovered Twitter in a way I hadn't discovered before. And it was amazing to me because during that 30-day suspension, my post on Twitter actually got me about 1,200 new friends on Facebook. So I guess it backfired on them a little. And it's a more intelligent platform.
The Streisand effect.
Well, I thought about Donald Rumsfeld's words, unintended consequences.
Unknown knowns. There are known knowns and unknown knowns.
Right. So,
which is true. It just sounds funny coming from him. That's all. And his person in his position.
Right. Well, you know, the latest.
So then it just,
go ahead.
It just makes me think of that scene in that Michael Douglas movie, The American President, where it's Michael J. Fox and Martin Sheen, and Michael J. Fox is saying, look, these people want truth so bad that they're willing to, like, you know, drink the sand, you know, or whatever. They want it so bad. They're so thirsty for truth, they'll drink the sand. And Martin Sheen's character says, Lewis, they drink the sand because they don't know the difference.
Right.
Right? So this whole Facebook, YouTube, hate, racism, all that stuff that's going on, are these platforms public utilities? Are they private companies? Well, first off, that's easy to answer. They all take money from our taxes. Right? So you're not a private company if you're taking a bunch of tax dollars, Amazon, you know, or Tesla or whoever, you know. These guys are taking a bunch of taxpayer dollars, which, you know, you can have the whole question about, is that a right thing to have taxes in the first place or not? Like, is that theft? Talk amongst yourselves. But then they take these tax dollars, they fund these companies. These guys get billions and billions and billions of dollars, not because they're great entrepreneurs, but because they got government subsidies, usually from the intelligence agencies and their secret black budgets and financing arms and these sort of things. But that goes on, so they're not private companies, right?
Right.
So that's not really included in the public conversation. These neglected aspects where it's like,
right,
well, they have the right to shut off free speech. And it's like, you know, there's a senator here from Connecticut. I don't know if he's first off, none of them are my senators because I didn't vote for any of these characters. I'm not sure if he services the area of the colony known as Connecticut that I live in. But he's saying that free speech must be censored on the internet in order for democracy to survive, right? That's like one of his quotes. His name's Chris Murphy.
Huh.
And so first off, Senator Murphy, it's a constitutional republic. We don't have a democracy. Secondly, the First Amendment is part of the Constitution, which is the legal document that gives you any type of authority in this country. So if you destroy it, guess what? You need a new job. And I could go on and on, but the point about censorship is that It's like the doorway to despotism. Like, you want to see despotism and tyranny in human culture? Look at what happens right after they start censoring people and preventing them to buy and sell, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a big fan of Eisenhower or any of these presidents necessarily, right? But I do pick up on what they say sometimes, right? And there was one quote by Eisenhower that I wrote down. I have it framed in my office. I've had this in here for a couple years. So this is Dwight D. Eisenhower. It's an address at Dartmouth College, June 14th, 1953. He says, and this is, you know, part of a speech, so this is a quote, and it's out of context because I'm not going to read the whole speech, but here's the quote from that address. Don't think you're going to conceal thoughts by concealing the evidence that they ever existed. Don't be afraid to read every book. People who would hold unpopular ideas are still part of America. And even if they have ideas that are contrary to our own, they have a right to them, a right to record them, and a right to have them in places that are accessible to others. This must be unquestioned, or it is not America.
Excellent.
Now, that was during the time of the McCarthy Red Scare and all this going on. But what he's pointing out is saying, hey, look, if you start censoring, that's a slippery slope. That is not freedom. When you deny people the right to say something in a public place that's a public utility or however you classify these companies, I don't care who it is. Like, if there's people out there preaching hate, then, you know, at least we know who they are, where they are, what they're saying. If you start censoring people, those people go underground. And then you have to, like, the government has to send in stool pigeons, it's like much more complicated.
Right.
Right? So racism and these types of things are never going to be fully eradicated. But once recognized that they exist among human species, which, which emanates from many cultures around the world, we can keep them in check. It's just like, we're never going to have a world with no tyranny. That's not going to happen. But what we can do is recognize that money has a heavy influence on politics, and maybe we should keep a closer eye on these guys.
All right.
So it's all just degrees in between, like, freedom and despotism. And there was a famous, famous among people who researched such things. There's a video from, like, it's a film from the 40s. It's like a government film, and it's like, here's the spectrum of freedom and despotism. And they're trying to show how, like, Russia or the Soviet Union or, you know, Germany or these countries were, like, headed toward despotism.
Right.
And America was free.
But
if you watch it today, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. All those things that they just said are despotism, those are going on now.
Right.
And nobody really notices them. And those who do notice them are being censored. Right. You know, and then under the guise of that, they're just taking out, like, Ron Paul lost his YouTube or his Facebook, or, you know, there's all sorts of people. It's like, wait a minute. He's like an 80-year-old doctor who talks about libertarian philosophy. You never see these people marching or doing any type of activity that would be associated with violence. They're like peaceful, leave us alone type people.
Right.
But while they're attacking other people, it's like, let's take out these other convenient targets who might speak up against, you know, crimes. Grand Theft World. I mean, because that's what we're seeing right now. Grand Theft World.
Right. Well, you know, I've seen that old film, Despotism, and it's a good one. I mean, people can Google it, and I'm sure it, and it's really old, okay? But, you know, at 3 o'clock this morning, Donald Trump, who never sleeps, obviously, decided to Google himself. And when he Googled himself, this is supposed the president of the United States. I haven't Googled myself in years. He Googled himself, and then he accused Google of only posting negative stories about him. And his economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, from Fox News, said that it should be a crime, and they want to look at pressing charges against Google. What do you think of that?
Well, I would ask the question, does Google ever adjust its search algorithm for political reasons? And if they do, is that wrong? Or can they do that because they're a private company? Here's the irony. I just see the irony in everything, right? Google wants to censor, right? That's in their algorithm.
Right.
But Google's owned by Alphabet. So Alphabet wants to censor all these letters and basically take itself out of existence. I don't get it, but it's funny. I don't know.
Well, Google's trying to defend themselves, saying that that's not the case.
And they want to take away everyone's letters and ability to communicate.
Right. Well, then you also have, you know, everything is fake news if it's not complimentary to Trump. And now we have other leaders in other parts of the world also using the expression fake news when they're caught red-handed doing whatever dastardly deeds they're doing. So here you have the American public who's too lazy to do their own homework or think for themselves, who just jumps on either side of that bandwagon. Okay. So you see how it's used to just divide people, you know, that divide and conquer. I mean, social media has made it easier than ever.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but you don't judge the merit of fact based on political aspects, and truth is never found by consensus. It's found by science, right? Objective truth, which would be the only type of truth that means anything to anyone else that's useful to them, right? Like if you have subjective truth, I can't use that. And if I have one, you can't use that. But if we have objective truth, then we can share that. That's where like functionality of society comes from. So the ability to print has been around, you know, the movable type for a couple hundred years. I know going back for many decades, our tax dollars funded something called Operation Mockingbird, which was the production, professional production of fake news,
right,
propaganda, lies to the American people who were paying for the whole project, right? So when tax dollars get turned on the public that are funding those tax dollars, that's called despotism. Those tax dollars were supposed to be, you know, aimed at our enemies and protect our freedoms around the world, right? That's what we thought, or our grandparents or whoever thought that they were paying taxes for. Because before World War II, there was no income tax, right? There was a whole different tax system prior to the war. Mm-hmm. And then they used, Donald Duck and Disney cartoons to convince everyone those war cartoons were
do your part.
Income tax. Right. So that's propaganda, too. That's fake news, right? Mm-hmm. So fake news, under different names, has been around for a long time. And militarily, fake news is called psychological warfare, right? So what we're living in is a weaponized culture where information is being used and wielded like weapons in order, in most of the well-funded cases, to erode and deteriorate individual freedoms and liberties.
Right.
And that's the whole idea behind globalism, and why globalism would want to be a caustic, acidic effect on any civilization or any nation that was trying to espouse the freedoms, like freedom to speak or freedom to, you know, protect yourself or any of these other things because that's what free people do. That's what free people do. And you know who we asked for our freedoms? We didn't ask anybody back in the day. We took them because we were being abused. If I could speak, like, I use the we very loosely here. Like, I was not alive in 1776.
Right. I don't think you were.
All
right.
But we had, like, a lot of us have ancestors that go back that far. I don't, but I grew up in a culture that benefited from all those fights and, like, getting the freedoms in the first place because I didn't grow up speaking Russian. Right, I didn't grow up in a gulag.
Right.
Although maybe today it's starting to resemble a little more 1984 and Brave New World than the rest of us would like.
Right, that's
for sure. But
again,
I think it goes to the culture that doesn't read. Like, those books have been out there, and like Alan Dulles says, like, the public doesn't read, and you know, reading is fundamental to freedom. That's what the liberal party, liber, is a word from Latin that means free as a verb, to free. And as a noun, it means book, because books lead to freedom. You can learn about the past and how other people were enslaved and say, hey, is there any of that going on here? And why, if other people had justifications, you don't just have to look today, like, why is censorship wrong? There's a couple centuries of people writing about censorship and why it's wrong. I have a book that's called Banned Books, and it's like from the 1800s, and it's a list of books banned by like the Catholic Church or something like that. Mm-hmm. So censorship and banning happens when there's someone in the power, a group in the power structure that feels threatened, and that's how they can deal with it.
Right. Well, you see a lot of
that book.
Right. You see a lot of books now, Richard, being stricken out of school curriculum. You know, whether it's, you know, the horrors that happened in Mississippi, you know, slavery, so many things, you know, true Native American history, all of that being stripped out of the textbooks in schools across America. So they continue to revise history to who it benefits the most.
Well, by Mississippi, you're referring to Medgar Evers back, right?
Right.
1967, 68, civil rights, and then they made that movie, Mississippi Burning, about it.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things about the struggle for liberty and freedom that are being censored, deleted, thrown out of your library. You'd be amazed at some of the books I get that are used books that come from libraries, throwing them away. Hmm. Like, this is a really valuable book in the history and like the truth of what's gone on. And yet the library's like, I'll throw this away. Because they either don't recognize it, which is dangerous, or they know and they've been told, get rid of this book. We don't want this book going into the future because it makes people hard to manage.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let people read about the frustration, aggression principle or Milgram experiment, all these sort of things. Like, that's going to like fade away, right? They only want you to have a certain information set because that's the only information set that makes you a useful human resource to their big plan for you.
Right.
And if you want to learn how to write your own script in life, then you have to take a step back from all that stuff they're pushing and say, wait, how do I learn how to learn anything? And now that I've learned that skill, what things do I need to learn to attain, maintain, and retain my individual freedom? And then once I'm a responsible, self-reliant person, I have the ability to help other people voluntarily, not because the government said, I'll spend your money better than you can, give us your money, and we'll give these other people some money and whatever. Like, that's where generosity and charity comes from, being self-reliant enough and not stealing from somebody else to give to somebody else. But actually saying, hey, I worked hard, I have a little extra, I can share with you, that would make me feel good. I consider that payment. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Right.
That's how the world could be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people spend a lot of time extracting a lot of wealth from a lot of good people so that it's not like that on a daily basis.
Right. But one thing you do see, and I always take note of it because it really gives me hope, is once you see a natural disaster, you know, and right now, I guess the latest one besides Hawaii, were those horrific fires in California. And they didn't wait for the government to come in and help them. They were helping each other out, the same as they did during, you know, Hurricane Katrina and so many other places. I think that it's a natural human instinct, of which I doubt any of our leaders are, to do the right thing, to help each other out. You know, in California, I mean, so many people got displaced. And then one guy, I was watching him being interviewed, he said he got so many offers of places to stay. And they show people helping each other out. They're not waiting for Uncle Sam to come in and save the day.
Well, what you're talking about is the same thing that I would describe the human race as. Most people are smart and they have good hearts. And in a disaster situation, people who can help naturally want to help people in need, because that's a human thing. That's how we got here. We didn't get here by just like living by ourselves in a cave. We got here by saying, hey, the cave is nice, but if I learn a couple rules, I can operate in society over there, and I can trade what I'm making for what they're making, and everyone lives a richer life. Mm-hmm. But that only works as long as there's no other third party that's putting us all at odds. So in a situation where you might have natural disaster relief, some of these like supra-governmental agencies like the United Nations comes in, and they say, hey, you guys want to help? We can't help. We have a system. We right. are going to help these people. We are professionals. Stand back. So that happened in Haiti, right? Mm-hmm. And the Clinton Foundation came in and said, we're going to help these people too. Well, the United Nations gave those people cholera, whether intentionally or unintentionally. It does not matter. Mm-hmm. They covered it up once they knew about it. And like all these thousands of children died. Right. And I said, I don't believe that. Like, I know some stuff about the UN, but I'm just not going to believe anything I hear. But then I go and look it up, and there's UN's response, and here's all, it's like that happened.
Right, same thing in Yemen. Right. They did the same thing in Yemen, you know, and then you got peacekeepers from the UN coming in, and then they're all raping and pillaging. So
there was, the peacekeepers, like that's a whole other topic, but I read this really good book about the peacekeepers in Rwanda. I think it was called Shake Hands with the Devil. And it was by Major General Romeo Dallaire, who was a Canadian general in NATO. So, because, you know, United Nations is over there, so the forces that serve United Nations come from a bunch of different countries. So this guy was like a Canadian general who was in charge of forces over there. And he goes through and describes, it's like, you know, there's indigenous groups who want to fight with each other over basically racist ideas. And then the UN's trying to step in, but they don't step in enough to really stop it. So it's almost like they just stand there and wait for a calamity to happen so they can benefit and then reappropriate and resystematize. It's almost like they want to resystematize and colonize an area, but they can't just do what they want. So they have these people destroy themselves, and then they come in and clean up the mess. Right. That's precisely what America is headed for right now. They're trying to have a second civil war in this country. And if you know anything about how the original civil war started, there's two other parties involved. It's not just the North and the South. There's also the British and the Russians. And you'd be very surprised who were our friends in the Civil War and who was our enemy. But regardless of that, history never repeats, but it does rhyme. And the Civil War that they're trying to create today also has a whole bunch of third parties who were instrumental in funding this calamity and causing strife. And they have a playbook. They literally have a playbook on how to go into a culture, cause chaos, and get it to destroy itself. The book was written in 1968. The guy's name is Gene Sharp. He worked for the U.S. government and the CIA. They wanted to overthrow all these countries around the world. Gene Sharp comes up with a plan. He says, if you take a civilization through these steps, you can break it basically into little pieces. That was used successfully by the CIA, and then that strategy has been brought back here to America. There's a documentary called How to Start a Revolution, which documents the story of Gene Sharp. I also have a bunch of the documents in my history blueprint. But the idea is that these techniques were developed as weapons of war to use on enemy countries, and now those exact same strategies are being used by third parties on the American people. And what's the worst is that our politicians are bribed by the whole process, and the media is owned by the people doing it. So the mass media that's out there with the billion-dollar budgets, the things that most people hear about every day, those have been controlled for a long time. So what I'm saying is this information is factual, but it's not making it through to most people who need to kind of comprehend it.
Absolutely.
Let's talk today.
Wow. You know what? I see that a lot on social media, where you have, Trump fires Mueller, we're all going to come out and there'll be a revolution. Then you have the other side posting their memes, if he doesn't fire Mueller, we're going to have a revolution. And then you see the whites against the blacks, and then you see the gays against the straights, and the religious against the non-religious. And you can see that they're all being whipped into this frenzy, because there's no facts behind anything any of these people are posting. It's just pure hatred and like a trained animal. Okay, I don't know how else to say it. You know, they're automatic responses.
Stimulus reaction. That's exactly what you're seeing. That's a great description, because without thinking and asking questions, that's how you think. You ask a question. You put the, instead of a period at the end of a sentence, you put a question mark. That's how thinking starts.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of assuming you know, let's go look. Let's ask a question and let's go look, because we might learn something. And that thing we learn might have something to do with keeping this place free and peaceful, instead of like at each other's throats in like a war zone.
Right.
So the term that you're describing, as far as like this vitriolic behavior, this caustic vitriolic behavior on social media, that's all fueled by what the Germans have termed Schadenfreude. It's the taking pleasure in the pain of other people who you see as your enemy,
right.
Political, social, cultural, whatever. So that's mostly what, oh, look at this. Look, this bad thing happened to this person I don't like. Look at that. Oh, got lots of thumbs up on it. Oh, a lot of other people like that too. It made them feel good that this person had something bad happen, right?
Nice.
So it's like the total opposite of what a free, healthy society could be. It's like the total opposite. So now we know what not to do in order to have freedom. So we just have to do the opposite. So instead of spending a lot of time taking pleasure in the pain of others, let's just take all that time we're saving by not doing that, and let's do some cool stuff for ourselves, for other people, for people in the future that aren't even here yet. Let's leave them like some facts and some truth, so they're not all spending their time trying to figure out what the heck's going on.
Right, exactly.
I know that I found the failures and the shortcomings of the education system and the mass media system. You know, I found that out early on in life, but there's a lot of people that don't even discover that. They're like 60, 70, 80 years old. They're like, wait a minute, Dan Rather and Walter Cronkite weren't really my friend. They talk to me every night in my house. I invited them in my house. I trust them. They're in my living room every night. What are you, they work for Mockingbird? I'm not saying they did. I'm just using examples.
Right.
Check it out. There's a long list of guys and girls who worked for that operation, and that operation arguably never really ended.
Right. No, I think it got worse.
Why would they end it?
Right. Why would they? It works.
End it.
Right. If it works, don't fix it. Rich, we need to take a short break. Stay with us. Richard Grove and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Null Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Hi, Maria here, and I have a message due to the pressure of the times we're living in. I'm calling on all students and millennials to get the education they need to fight the fascism taking over our world. I've made a special subscription offer for students and for seniors on a limited budget. For just $9.99 a month, you can subscribe and get that education. Over 500 hours of real education that's necessary to understand the world, the problems, and the solutions. Remember, knowledge is power. Together, you can change the world, but to do so, you must be informed of what's really going on and have real facts to support you in your endeavors. It's time for all the grandmothers to take a stand and teach the younger generation what their life could be and how to get there. Help me help you. One person cannot do it alone, and the guidance you seek is right here at www.maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. Your generation is the generation we've been waiting for, so let me help you. Thanks for listening. Okay, welcome back to Tragedy and Hope with my excellent friend and co-host, Richard Grove, one-of-a-kind Richard Grove, who I think is a true American historian and a treasure trove of information, as you can hear. You know, it's interesting that this conversation, which, by the way, as my audience should know by now, is not scripted, not even pre-planned. We never know what we're going to talk about when we get started. But it's funny that all that you've talked about, I'll tell you a funny story that happened to me yesterday. I was at the gym, and this, you know, a lot of the men in my gym are, you know, they got 10, 20 years on me, okay? And one of them, because it's a retirement community, basically, where I live, one of them said he just loves this town because this town has everything to offer. And I looked at him and I said, this town has nothing to offer. I said, it has nothing to offer to anyone under the age of 60. And this other man who I know is 84, because I overheard him talking about his age the other day, he gets engaged listening to me talk to this other guy who's in his 80s. And I pled the case for young people in this town that are always demonized for drugs and sex and whatnot. And I said, but there's nothing for these young people to do. When they wanted to bring a Y into town, they voted against it. You know, these kids don't have like an arcade or a mall or any place to hang out. I said, and children left unattended, well, what's left but drugs and sex? And then I just, you know, went through the only store we have in town is Walmart. And I educated them of why I've never spent $1 in Walmart. And I have to tell you, Rich, these two men, this conversation went on for a minimum of 15 minutes. Okay. They listened to everything I had to say. And it was like the first time they ever saw that perspective. And then the old guy said to me, you know what? I really enjoyed listening to you, and you're right on so many things I had never noticed before. And I think that fits into what we just talked about in the first half of the show.
That you can teach old dogs new tricks.
Obviously. Well,
if they're interested.
Well, but you know what? It changed their whole perspective. You know, their truth was one-sided. You know, I told them before I turned 60, I couldn't live up here. I would have killed myself. There's nothing to do. I said, and if I was a teenager, forget it. I'd hightail it the hell out of here. But to make them really take a different look, and, you know, they're like, why'd you move here? I said, for the weather, okay? I don't want to fry in Phoenix. And then they talked about, well, at least we have a movie theater. I said, but the movie theater only shows censored movies. There are certain movies that this guy will never play. Okay, and then they paid attention and they realized there are certain movies they have never been able to see here. And you're right, you know, but they weren't thinking before I brought that to their attention. You know, one of my friends says, oh, you should see Chappaquiddick. I said, that movie will never show in my town. You know, and then this old guy said to me, well, you know, they got this movie about the Mormons. He says, I'm sure they're never going to show that here either. I said, why would they? This is a Mormon town. You know what I mean? So it's nice to be able, it's not so much what you say, but how you say it. You know, you've got to find that segue. You've got to find that, where do we agree? To be able to talk like a calm human being without going crazy like you were born again. To get people's attention and to make them stop and think. So, you know, I have to say, and then when I was leaving the gym, I went over to the guy who started the conversation. I said, you shouldn't have got me started. And he was just laughing. Because when somebody asks me something, that's it. I'm there. I'm totally engaged in the conversation. Which, of course, you don't see on social media where everybody wants to kill each other. You know, and they're going to stick by their opinions. And we all know the definition of opinions.
Yeah.
So to me,
we've
you know.
We've all got them. And they're not too useful to other people.
Right. Now we have one sitting in the White House. But when you look at, you know, even, look, I live in a totally Republican state. And I can tell you that the Republicans I talk to are up in arms with their own party. Okay. So that's a good thing. You know, you have to be on the ground to really feel the pulse of the people. And if you're not, if you're afraid to talk to other people, then, you know, what good are you? All right. And I've been saying that for, God, 19 years of doing this show. Whatever you learn on this show, share it with other people. Look for a segue, even the girl begging your stuff at the supermarket. Find some reason to start a conversation. So I understand the importance of books, but you know, there's also the importance of real live communication, speaking to other people in person. You know, and I think that the isolation of texting and, you know, even my kids, they don't even want to, you know, talk on the phone. Everything's texting now. You know, you're losing the human touch, and I think that's part of the plan, too.
Well, I'm a big fan of real live communication, and I think that it'll make a comeback because people have nostalgia for it, but they're just so fascinated with the new stuff.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Like seeing if you saw a pizza or a burger being made by a robot, that'd be really cool maybe the first time you saw it, right? But then you start to realize what are the effects of all these robots being brought into society? And how are robots created? By the way, robot means slave. Robotnik is a Slavic word for slave. So robots are created as slaves, but we come from a culture where slavery is wrong, right? but it's okay because, you know, until they have artificial intelligence, the slaves won't even know about it. Mm-hmm. Right? So we don't even really question these things that are going on because they're going on and things are going on so fast. That's like, you know, like one of my favorite lines from a movie is the one from Ferris Bueller where he's like, life happens pretty fast. Every now and then you get to stop and take a look around. Right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that, you know, the Viktor Frankl quote that he didn't really say says, you know, you got to stop between the stimulus and the reaction and put your thinking in there because that's the only individuality. That's the only contribution you're really making to this world. Mm-hmm. The world is providing the stimulus. The world receives the reaction. The only part that's you in that equation is the part where you think and do something in between there and make it a response, not a reaction. And without that, when you're saying that people are like animals or robots or they're being trained and it's like stimulus response, that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. They're losing their essence. You're losing the essence of what it means to be a human being by just being stimulus reaction. It makes you no different than a squirrel or a pigeon in the terms of people who seek to control life on this planet. And there are some people with grandiose enough egos that think they can do that. They can inventory and control all life on this planet forever without freedom, right? So that's the plan for the future. We're in the midst of that plan. It's ongoing. So what are we all going to do about it?
Well,
Maria decided 19 years ago what she was going to do about it. Hmm. I got my butt in gear 12 years ago.
Right.
You know, and anyone who looks up some of the stuff we were talking about today is going to pull on that loose thread that they're going to be like, wait, there's more thread. What's this attached to?
Exactly.
They're going to start learning. They're going to learn their way outside the box. They're going to slowly start turning on their ability to ask questions. And Aristotle wrote this book called On the Soul. It's all about your mind's ability to ask questions and use your brain. So the soul is the essence of the humanness and it's the inquiry part where we're asking questions. And if there's not like some sort of order to this universe, then science couldn't exist because you couldn't expect to ask a question and find an answer that made any sense. And yet science does that all the time.
Right.
So what I'm saying is there's still a lot of cool stuff here that has yet to be defined and understood and explored and leveraged. And that I don't think the human species is maxed out. We just have to get past this point where we're all like so prone to fight with each other and start working together to make some really beautiful music in the world.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when I was younger, especially in the 60s, you know, peace, love, and rock and roll, and we were talking about peace and whatnot, and the conversation always came down to politics doesn't want peace, that you can't make money during peaceful times. And yet, we could make plenty of money by actually creating beauty in the world instead of death and destruction. But that's always been an obstacle, you know, with the people that say, well, there's no money to be made during peacetime. There's what would you do in a perfect world? We might actually evolve. There's a thought.
Yeah, I just think that the things are the way they are is because the people in power are not, they're not inspired to be creative. So let's say that the United States and the British government own the monopoly on the world's arms trade. If we want the world's arms trade to shrink, we got to give these guys some better ideas on how to use their robots to make stuff. Be like, look, instead of making stuff to kill people on the other side of the planet, mm-hmm. how about we make some cool stuff that saves some lives, right? We could get, you know, I don't know. Somebody's got to come up with a really good sales pitch for these guys. Be like, look, it would be less work, it would be more money, and everybody would be happier. What do you think? And then they could be like, no, we're really evil. We don't care about that. And be like, fine, great. We got you all in the room. Now we know what to do with you.
Right, right.
I'll leave and we'll lock the door in this place and we're all set then, you know?
Well, you know what?
But I think until they have a better idea, they're going to continue to do what they do, which is let's make the helicopter go faster, a missile blow up more people or be more or whatever. Like that's all they're doing at those defense contractor type companies. And there is a need for it because there's other people on the other side of the planet that got similar weapons that want to, right? So there is some minor justification for it, but from a major strategic where is humanity going type of level, it is not a good way to utilize our resources or to spend so many lives in the deleterious effects of all these wars. It's embarrassing.
I totally agree. Huh. I totally agree. I mean, I don't remember a time in my entire lifetime that we haven't been at war.
That's because there hasn't been anything. There, you know, we've invaded like, what is it, 58 countries? Or I don't keep track anymore because it's a list. And basically, we've been at war since World War II when you count the CIA interventions in Guatemala and Honduras and all these other list of countries, man.
Yeah, that's hundreds.
You know, it's not just the CIA. They're working with British MI6. They're good. They're crazy cousins over there that speak the same language almost, you know. They're going and overthrowing dictatorships or whoever, you know, doesn't want to play along nice with them. That's what they do.
Right, still colonizing
the world. I think
that
should just be taught. It should just be taught. If that's how things are and these guys are like, ah, that's how it has to be, then just teach us. That's how it is. Don't tell us that, you know, it's three branches of government. They check some balances. It's like, no, tell me about the black budget. Tell me where that money comes from, where it goes, how you guys go. Oh, you guys traded guns for cocaine and had freeway Ricky Ross distributed in L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about that. Because that seems to make a lot more sense in this other story than this other stuff that you're telling me. Right?
Wow.
Tell me the story about Osama bin Laden being a drug kingpin and the guys that were on the alleged hijackers actually being guys who flew planes like Barry Seal,
right,
under Saudi passport diplomatic immunity into Florida and back to the Saudi, right? Tell me that story, because there's a lot of evidence for that, and there's not too much evidence for these guys who couldn't, you know, fly a Cessna making 270-degree turns at 300 miles an hour into a place with 96 cameras and no videotapes.
Exactly.
Like, you know?
Well, kind of brings
but
us
so
right back.
So many people, they're satisfied with the sand, right? So you have to know the difference. You're like, that's not water. I want the water. You're giving me sand, right? That's my metaphor for today's show.
I sand like the metaphor. Or as Italians would say, what's a metaphor you? But, you know, it takes us back to 9/11. And, you know, a lot of times people will still, at this point in time, say to me, why are you still covering with talking about 9/11? Well, 9/11 was the turning point for the world we have right now. And unless the truth of 9/11 comes out, which, you know, a lot of people falsely believe Trump was going to reopen the investigation into 9/11. I was like, how stupid are people? Obviously, pretty stupid. But until we understand that that was an attack on our own people, by, you know, the powers that be, you will never understand how we moved into this pseudo dictatorship that we're living under now. And this was all by design. It's all by design. And never anything in politics never happens by accident.
Well, and this is what happens when people become very predictable, don't ask questions, and become very malleable to the propaganda, is that the government and the powers that be that are supra-governmental can do what they want without recourse. And they can sit there and laugh, even if you have the evidence. You know, it's like, you know, the guy says to Robert Redford in, what was the movie? Operation Condor, where he goes to the New York Times. He's like, I just gave it to the New York Times. And the guy says, what happens if they don't print it?
Right.
We own the New York Times, dude. They're not going to print it. They're not going to tell the truth to the public, you idiot. And that's the end of the movie. Robert Redford's an idiot.
Right.
Oh, spoiler alert. 4 years later.
That's an old movie, so if anybody hasn't seen it by now, too bad, too sad if that was a spoiler alert. But, you know, you look at so many, you know, brave people that actually did try to make a difference, like Gary Webb, and look what happened to him, you know. And there's an excellent movie about
it. They went through a systematic approach to ruin his reputation and then put him in a situation where he separated from his wife and then put him in a situation where it's believable that he would shoot himself twice in the head with like two different guns.
Right. Well, that's a trick I'd like to see on TV. I'd like to see somebody be able to shoot themselves twice in the head.
Well, and the fact that they made the Hollywood movie with Jeremy Renner about like, and they don't really give you those pieces. They give you a very selective view. And I understand the limitations of cinema.
Right.
But you can also be like, hey, you know, I think it's maybe in the last, there's a text card at the end of the movie. It's like, oh, by the way, he was shot with like twice in the head.
Right. Exactly.
But it wasn't like, you know, it was kind of kept out of the theatrical presentation because I think that would be more memorable,
right?
Than just having some, like, here's a little snippet at the end. By the way, it was kind of suspicious.
Well, you know, I just recently watched a series. I think it was on Amazon Prime. With Hugh Grant, a true story, and it was called A Very English Scandal. And it's about a true story about a politician who was very high up in Parliament who literally gets away with murder. And they show you step by step how they use the media. And I think this happened like in 1950s, how they used the media to demonize the victim. And even though everybody knew this guy was guilty because he was a highly revered, way up there politician, they threw the case for him. And of course, he never had a career after that, but he literally got away with it. And when you look at that, how can you not? And it's very, by the way, it's very well done and very entertaining. But when you look at that, you know, one of the first things I said, this is what goes on in American politics all the time. It doesn't matter how guilty these people are. It depends, you know, it's who you know to whether or not, you know, I don't care what court you go to, who's going to let you go.
Yeah, that's what politics is for. Some animals have more rights, or some animals are more equal than other animals. Right. From 19, Animal Farm, Orwell's Animal Farm.
Right.
So when you were talking about the Hugh Grant, that story, what about Jimmy Savile? If you want to learn about how the media and the government and all these people will cover up for a guy who's abusing children, mm-hmm. who's abusing people in a mentally handicapped hospital where these people don't even have the power to tell people. There's so much, that's the thing. You got to balance it out. The world is not all butterflies and flowers, but it's not also all Jimmy Savile. So you got to understand a little bit about each end of the spectrum. Mm. The end of the spectrum that really hurts is the Jimmy Savile stuff. The butterflies and the flowers, they're not going to hurt you.
Right.
But the fact that there are people at the highest places of government and so-called authority and so-called investigation police type of apparatus mm-hmm. that could cover that up systematically for over 40 years and it didn't break until after he was dead. And then the guy who covered it up for the BBC, do you know what he does today, Maria?
No.
He's in charge of the New York Times.
Oh, no surprise. Well, Savile was close with the king, the queen.
The guy they brought in from the New York Times is the former director general of the BBC during the time. And then I was like, well, maybe he just worked there and didn't know anything about it. Then I read the court transcripts where they're talking about how he was notified and how he didn't do anything and how he covered all this stuff. And I was like, well, when the New York Times hired him, why didn't they tell us all? Oh, by the way, the guy we just hired, he helped to handle that Jimmy Savile scandal for the BBC and put. So these are very questionable things that it's like, I don't know.
You know, David, listen.
I'm telling you about that.
David Icke exposed Jimmy Savile years ago with so many other members of parliament as pedophiles and whatnot. And people laughed at David and his work. And then, of course, it was proven to be true. Now we have here in the United States the big scandal and expose of the Catholic Church and the cover up of their pedophiles. You know, the Pope didn't get a warm welcome in Ireland this week. People want him to step down. So you can see, you know, people are becoming more and more aware and starting to put some pressure on these people. I don't know how long it's going to take to get rid of them.
Just busted those 300 priests in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. In Pennsylvania.
It had thousands of victims over 70 years they knew about it.
Right, and they're saying there's no way the Pope can't know about it.
Like, if your family's been donating to the people that are, harming children, you should think about that. Maybe there's something better you could be doing.
When you're dropping your kids off to be taught Bible instruction by these pedophiles. I mean, these are the people you're supposed to trust.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've always said...
10 years ago, this really wasn't talked about anywhere. So we must have some freedom of speech left, and I think we should use it while we can, because it's definitely making a difference to some people.
Mm-hmm. So what are you working on now, Rich?
I'm editing film footage for my documentary. The most recent interview that we shot last month was with the only Marine to survive the USS Liberty. And I shot a 4-hour interview with him. His name is Sergeant Bryce Lockwood. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of legitimate questions about that incident, very short. During the Six Days War, while Israel was at war with the United Arab Republic, a U.S. Navy NSA spy ship in international waters was attacked by Israel several times, and then it was claimed as a misidentification that they thought our ship was an Egyptian ship, a horse carrier from World War I that was up for scrap in a scrapyard. So it's an interesting story because it contradicts the public narrative.
Right.
And yet, 51 years later, there's still never been an investigation, which is mandated by the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, that Congress has to investigate these types of crimes on the high seas.
Well, I have an interview with one of the survivors in my archives, and we covered that in depth about how the ship was clearly flying the American flag, how Johnson at the time... originally was sending help, and then he got his call from Israel, and he just let him die out there. He called the planes back. So I don't even remember his last name. I think it was Phil something or other. God, I've had so many people in 19 years, it's hard to recall sometimes. But this is also real history, and people here in the United States send the $10 million of our tax dollars to Israel every day. We need to know about, are they our friends or are they our foes? But that's not going to be in the history books, I'm sure.
Right, and I just want, these guys want to get their story. They want an investigation before they all die off, because that's what he says in the interview. He said, they're hoping we all just die off and this question goes away.
Right. Well, his name was Phil Turney. It just came to me.
Right, yeah. I've heard him speak as well.
Right, and then to shut him down, they started threatening the life of his children, because that's what cowards do. They don't threaten you. Right. They threaten your children.
Right.
But these are real heroes. You know, everybody wants to talk about this guy's a hero, that guy's a hero. These are real heroes, people that are really speaking truth from their own experience of having been there. Anyway, Rich, I'm glad you're busy, and I'm glad you're back, and I'm glad you're still working, and I'm looking forward to doing the show more often with you.
Thank you so much for the invitation today, Maria. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you'd like to know more, check out tragedyandhope.com.
Absolutely. You take care. We'll talk soon, Rich.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Richard Grove. Check out his work. He's a treasure trove of information. I knew that the first day he sent me his material. Absolutely was convinced of it when I met him in Chicago. So Richard has agreed to come back on the show every other month, so you can look forward to that. And thank you for supporting the show. And remember, I will be back with the news on Friday. Take care.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.